It's Tuesday, May 27th, 2014, and you're listening to episode 341 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 45 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chad.
And this is Julia.
So,
I can't believe we're going to talk about
this. We are. For geeks, it is never too early to start thinking about Halloween because of the fact that, look, especially if you've got a character you really like, you know, whether you're into cosplay or not, there's probably some costume, some suit of armor, who knows what it is, that you'd really love to have at a high quality.
We know what yours is, Dan, since
yes,
you got a piece of it in.
Mine finally came in. For years, I've been trying to put together a Cobra Crimson Guard costume. And for anyone who doesn't know what the Cobra Crimson Guard are, I'll link a picture in the show notes. But they were kind of the elite soldiers in the inner circle of Cobra from G.I. Joe. The hardest part for that was going to be the helmet, because most of the costume is just sewing and iron on stuff and things like easy to do. I mean, not for me, but easy for Carla to do. And so I can get, you know, the coat and the pants and all that kind of stuff.
What's the G.I. Joe female officer character with the glasses?
Oh, there's Lady Jane and Scarlet.
Well, she's a Cobra person.
That's Baroness.
Baroness. Carla could pull off a Baroness costume.
She'd
have to get her hair straightened.
Yeah, she actually straightens her hair fairly often anyway, because she has this kind of steam thingy that straightens her hair that she uses. But I did get the helmet. I finally tracked down somebody who makes a whole slew of different kinds of helmets, including just about every helmet there is in G.I. Joe. I mean, like Pit Vipers, Strato Vipers, Cobra Commander, I mean, you name it. And I got from them a Crimson Guard helmet. Now, the only thing about it was they apparently normally do it in kind of brighter colors, and I wanted it in the more traditional, like, burgundy and dark silver. But no problem. They repainted it for me, and it's a great helmet. And I was showing it to these guys before the show, and I think Chad Facebooked Wayne wearing it.
Yeah, yes. I was surprised by how light it was. I expected it to be, because this, I think it's metal.
No, it's like a resin or something. Yeah,
it was a nice, it looked good. It looked like it would be metal, but it was nice and light.
Well, and I like the way they fit it on the inside, because I was really worried that the whole thing would just be empty. And so either it'd fit or it wouldn't. But they did a great job of putting in kind of padding and webbing and such, so it kind of settles on your head a little better.
Yeah, you, Chad, and I all put it on, and it fit all of our heads, and they're drastically different.
Yeah.
It didn't fit mine, but that's because I have a giant bun on top of my head.
So, Julia, apparently Mike wants to get into costume making.
Yes.
But he wants to, unlike me, he's not just going to buy a piece and then have his wife make the rest. He wants to do the whole, like, all of, was it vacuum forming?
Yeah, he wants to make, like, stormtrooper armor is what he eventually wants to do.
From Star Wars, might not know.
I had the reverse problem. I told people I wanted to be Crimson Guard. Everyone thought I was talking about the Crimson Guard from Star Wars.
Right.
Like, no. Oh, yeah, that's a complicated costume, too. But we have a lot of friends in the 501st Legion, and they all make it. We've been over to armor parties, is what they call them, where they just, they get their, they call it their tub armor, because it's made out of PVC pipe and vacuum forming. And they're, like, sanding it and doing all this work. And I told Mike the only way he'd be able to take over a garage and do this is if he made me boob armor, which is stormtrooper armor's boobs. I think it's funny.
Fair enough.
They didn't have any in the movie.
Yeah, because there's no female clones.
So I'm really curious if the 501st...
Well, not all Star Troopers are clones.
Well, it depends on which.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, later on, there's no clones.
Yeah. Some of them were conscripts and such.
So I'm curious if I would actually be allowed into, like, the costuming group with the standards they have. Because
you be like a 501st, but a chick 501st?
Yeah, that's what I should ask some of my friends. I don't know if you can't have boobs, because they don't in the movies.
Because they're all guys in the movies.
Right. Yeah.
A group of geeks might turn you down for having boobs.
Huh.
I can't comprehend this. That doesn't...
I'm with you. I don't think that's not going to happen.
I think I know they let the Mandalorians have them.
Yeah, because there's female Mandalorians. Yeah.
I thought there's only one Mandalorian, because I thought the rest of them were all killed.
In the expanded universe, there's a bunch.
EU's
you know, the
away,
thing,
though.
The thing that doesn't count anymore.
Right. Yeah, apparently.
I don't know.
So where do you guys fall on that debate? Because that is a huge, raging, insane debate.
Let me start off.
Let's do a little setup.
Okay.
So they're making new Star Wars movies.
Right.
I'm sure nobody listening to the show has heard this part.
They being Disney.
We're breaking news on
Breaking
Fear
News. Now, if you don't really follow it, there's this whole expanded universe, which is basically a zillion books and video games and all this comic sort of books, comic book media that goes into all this stuff.
It's
people are like, it's super, super popular, and really only like 10% of it's popular. The rest is almost unknown unless you're an uber geek, because there's so much of it.
Well, and the people that are fans of it, one of their big things has always been, Lucas says this is canon.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that they've always gone on, because I've known people that have read all this. I haven't read a single Star Wars book.
Now, Disney is making Star Wars movies, and Lucas sold the rights.
They're making new Star Wars movies?
Yeah, breaking news on Fear the
Beast. I know, right?
I have an entire Star Wars room. I know this.
I just don't care. I'm just not a huge Star Wars fan.
All right, well, go on.
Anyway.
If I can't tangent, you can't tangent. Yes. So continue.
So anyway, Disney has said, or the creators have said, that they are flushing the EU.
The European Union.
The European Union
yes.
is gone. Out. Just gone.
Disney
Star
is
Wars
attacking
universe.
It.
Yes.
I support this.
And in addition, the expanded universe is not going to be acknowledged. It's not, they say, is no longer canon. So, nerds, where do you fall?
It's like throwing it out as a combination of two things. They're saying that it's not going to be canon for the new movies, mm-hmm. but they're also doing new books to tie in with the new movies. Uh-huh. So it's not just that this universe isn't canon for the new movies. It's we're not going to keep making books over there because we're going to start it up new here. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where people have gotten really
angry
with them.
So they're not rebooting the series. Because remember, the expanded universe is
Treating the movies as canon.
Yeah, right. Yeah. All the expanded universe is add-on,
including the one with Wilford Brimley. For anyone who doesn't remember, did any of you guys see him?
Yeah, yeah. I used to own that.
I
on
did too.
Beta.
Yeah, I had it on VHS, but I did used to own the Star Wars movie with Wilford Brimley on.
Well, in my opinion, and please, Star Wars fans, don't kill me because I can't. I think it's Zahn.
Yeah.
Okay. His books are supposed to be very good. I've never personally read them, but all of my Star Wars geek friends love it.
Yeah.
And they're actually kind of upset that they're throwing those out.
Okay, here's where I'm going to throw myself under the bus. All right, let me start off with
the Star Wars bus. What a horrible way to die.
Now, let me start off with a statement that is more neutral.
Yeah.
There's all these rumors, and everybody out there is convinced they know what goes on in entertainment, when in truth, probably most of us have no freaking idea.
You only know what they sell you.
Exactly. The way that I understood the expanded universe, which is probably wrong, but let me just throw out there, whatever you're going to contradict me with is also probably wrong, was that Lucas told them the EU would be canon unless they started talking about clones. And in one of the books, they started talking about the Clone Wars. And at that point,
I think you're talking about the Timothy Zahn stuff.
He said you're cut off. It's not canon anymore.
Just his books.
But the thing, now this is where I'm going to throw myself under the bus. This is the non-neutral statement.
Oh, okay. This is the value judgment.
I tried so hard to read Heir to the Empire. Uh-huh. And I swear it was one of the most boring books I've ever read in my entire life. I made it maybe half to three quarters of the way through that one book, and I was done. I could not do it. I just couldn't do it.
I enjoy the movies. I have enjoyed some of the games. I would say I don't really consider myself a Star Wars fan, but I do.
Yeah,
I enjoy the setting.
You got no problem
and things.
With it.
Yeah, I enjoy the settings. I do like the movies, some of the cartoons.
I think the best thing about Star Wars are the video games. They have come up with some awesome video games.
I've always kind of looked at it for any franchise as the books are separate from the movies, are separate from the comics, and each one is a separate telling. Where this one got a little muddy was Lucas saying, yes, this stuff is canon. So a lot of people really got invested in it.
Of course he said it was canon.
Because it sells.
I'm going to shatter some hopes and dreams here. Lucas is not the gatekeeper of your nostalgic childhood. Lucas is in it for the money.
Well, not to mention, Lucas is not the brightest person.
No.
I know the prequels did counter some of the books.
If he's making millions of dollars with other people writing licensed products, and then he says, you know what? I can release a press statement that is 20 words long, and I will make millions more because I say this is canon. Boom! He's the 1812 overtures playing behind him. It's so canon. I mean, it's like he is rolling out the guns.
So, okay, random bit of trivia on that. The 1812 overture. All right, so I don't know if this is going, I'm sure this has come up on the show at some point, but for anyone who doesn't recall, my dad, before he retired, was a band director, and...
No, say it right. What was he?
He was a band doctor.
Yes.
What?
There's the story behind that. Is he got a vanity plate, but at the time, they would only allow six letters and a dash. So instead of B-A-N-D-D-I-R, it was B-A-N-D-D-R. And so his car became Band Doctor. There is still funny. A Band Doctor to this day, though I think it's like the third or fourth car to wear those plates. But Band Doctor does still exist. Yes. The original one, man, it was this old Cavalier. Holy crap, that thing was a workhorse. It had, I don't know how many miles on it, six digits of miles, and it just never broke down. That thing just went and went and went. Anyway, this was before GM made their cars blow up. But I say it's
not an official Fear the Boot position. Don't sue us, GM.
Actually, be great publicity. You know, what are you going to take from me? I've got a Pontiac downstairs. You can repo it if I've paid for it. So you're not
the end to check engine lights.
Yeah,
on.
Check engine lights on. You get the trade in value on it, which probably isn't going to be much. They're just going to wholesale it. But if you want it, come and get it. But no, all right. So. My dad is a band director, and he still is a composer, and he's composed all kinds of music. He's composed music for colleges, for high schools, for
countries.
Yes, for countries. During the 1980 Olympics, the tiny little European country of Liechtenstein came out, and they announced that they were playing some other country's national anthem because that country did not have its own. And so my dad sat down and wrote them a national anthem and sent it to the Prince of Liechtenstein. The prince wrote him back and said, no, actually, we do have a national anthem. The people.
This was the days before the Wikipedia.
Yeah, this is 1980s here. You have no way of looking this up. He just said the people on CBS are just idiots or NBC or whatever it was.
No, let's go with NBC. That's where Chris works.
Okay. He said that Chris is an idiot. And he sent my dad back a whole bunch of, do you guys know what the gold stamps are, where you have like, it's like a stamp. But it's not just like, oh, these are just like 44 cent or forever stamps or whatever. They actually like emboss them with these really detailed designs and they lace them with gold and all this stuff. Wow. He sent him a sheet of these high end gold embossed royal stamps and also awarded him a royal medal.
Oh, cool.
For doing it. He was so blown away by my dad's work that he gave him and it's sitting in a safety deposit box.
Did he get him a box of Lipton tea, too?
Liechtenstein.
Liechtenstein, I guess, would be a beer stein full of really bad tea. For anyone who thinks American tea begins and ends at Lipton, that's about the same as American beer beginning and ending at Bud Light. That is simply not the case. But here's the point. He was telling me some music history. The 1812 Overture was, we typically perform it with a very large, or at least the sounds of very large cannons. Yeah. He said that the original 1812 Overture was actually written with Napoleonic light field pieces. And it was, so instead of, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, boom, it's actually da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, pop. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, pop. He said it's actually pretty pathetic sounding.
We've improved it.
We have Americanized it. We supersized it.
We need a bigger cannon.
And for anyone who's really not up on their music history, the 1812 Overture had nothing to do with the American War of 1812. Oh, it was about the Napoleonic Wars.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Look at when it was written.
Yeah. Well, I mean, 1812 sticks out in American history. Because that was, you know, that whole war where we burnt the Canadian capital and they burnt ours. And it was just a whole lot of silliness that ended up with us winning Louisiana.
Yay!
Worthwhile. Necessary. All right. So let's talk about role-playing games. There was this topic that we talked about two episodes back, which for us was last week. Because we recorded, I think, two episodes last week, if memory serves. I don't know. We did whatever.
I was home throwing up, so I have no idea.
Hot.
I was wedding-ing.
That's way.
I was wedding.
Okay, I heard a different word there.
To wedding,
right? Yes. I heard. Yeah, well, I heard a verb, but okay. So there's a problem that I've had in several of the games that I've run over the years, which is you get these dead zones in the game created by a lack of role play. Because you see, you do all of your legwork. Let's just presume that's all in place. You had a group template. You got everyone to do a character write up and make sure they're interested in their characters. You've got things in the plot for them to do. You've got interesting NPCs for them to interact with. But anytime you are not directly asking them for an action, somebody's pointing a gun at you. What do you do? The moment you say, okay, you have a breather, whatever, it's just crickets.
Yeah.
And you as a game master feel like, wow, my game's crap. This is boring.
It's the campfire scene. You know, you're playing a fantasy role-playing game, medieval, and you're going from town to town. You, as a game master, you're like, oh, this will be great. You know, we had all this action in the town and all this mystery in the next town, and they don't know what's going to happen. There's all these plot hooks, and there's all this character interaction. You know, all the characters are connected, and, you know, all this interpersonal drama is going on. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to have it take a day to get to the next town. They're going to have to camp in the woods. And, you know, it's just like you say, what are you doing? You know, you're camping in the woods. You still, you gotta spend the night here, and then you can move on to the town. What do you do? Oh, well, we build a fire and we put up the tents. Okay, yeah, that's great. But what do you do? Oh, we set up watches and yeah. we do a rotation and of watches.
And if
stuff,
we're really going to be crazy, somebody might cast Wyvern Watch and somebody might roll their wilderness lore to go kill a deer.
Oh, I memorize my spells. I practice my quick draw. It's just like, no, shut up and talk to each other.
Well, shut up and talk.
That's right.
As a player, I've been on the other side of this before. Yeah. Where the GM is setting something like this up and that it's for the sole purpose of giving you a chance to roleplay. And as a player, you don't catch on that that's what he's trying to do right away. So when he keeps asking things, you're thinking, what did I forget?
What did I miss?
There's something I should be doing
here. Oh my God.
There must be something in the woods. There must be. Yeah. So we're not doing something right.
He's so laser focused on this camping.
Exactly.
Guys.
Yeah. Well, what are we not? Exactly. He's asking details. If he's asking details like, so who's doing what? Clearly, he's trying to set the battle map.
Who's awake? Because he's thinking, well, who's awake? Who can, like, talk to each other? Oh, shit.
And, of course, every D&D character in the history of D&D is a light sleeper.
That's right.
That's always a declared...
Well, you're sleeping in all that armor. Of course,
it's
you're a light
nowhere
sleeper.
On your character sheet, but that is a declared trait of every D&D character in D&D history, is if you're not a drunk dwarf, you're a light sleeper.
What's funny is I played in a Pathfinder game that went on for 2 years, where our GM actually made us roll for waking up. So people could still be asleep. And my brother was known to roll crap. And he would seriously sleep through everything. It was just, he just stopped rolling. He's like, I'm just sleeping.
So Sarah is about a mediocre roller when it comes to, like, I roll horribly. Everyone knows that. Like,
he does.
We were playing Arkham Horror and I roll 10 dice at one point.
It was amazing.
And I got one success, I think. To the point that we took a picture and put it on Facebook. So Sarah's not like that, though. She does middle of the road. She has good rolls. She has bad rolls.
She has a statistical average.
If, however, she ever has to roll to wake up, because this has happened in con games, it's happened in Pathfinder Society, and a few other places where her character's been asleep and she has to roll to wake up, she will never make the roll. That is the one time she rolls ones and twos, you know, every time.
I put the onus on the players for this. But I think there is something the game master has to be careful with. When you have this game going on, and it's action, 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 or whatever, plot, doesn't matter. But it's GM-centric stuff. And then you just kind of stop and be like, okay, now you guys role play.
Yeah.
That's like that horrible thing where all the wives and girlfriends want to hang out, and the guys don't know each other. But because all men, clearly they can dump you in a room.
Well, we can sports, the sportsening.
Yeah, they can dump you in a room with a TV on Sports Network with a few beers, and you'll instantly become fast friends.
Sports Network, Sports Midwest.
Well, we expect you to do what we do and just pretend to like each other.
Guys, don't do that.
I know, I'm just messing with
and
you.
And so it is
we
so...
We actually do just like each other.
It's so freaking awkward.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with role. But having given that one caveat, I put this back on the players because assuming the game master is not pushing the game so hard, the plot, the NPCs, that there's no room to role play, the players really ought to be role playing all throughout. And when we get to that scene where there's not a whole lot going on and you can't think of anything your character would say, you've got one of a couple issues. You're checked out of the game. You're really not that into your character. Or, and this is one that I talked about in the prior episode, there's this egocentrism where you have all these thoughts about your character, but guess what? To have a conversation, you have to have an interest in somebody else. And so I have all these thoughts about who my character is and how I want my character to develop and my character, but I can't have a conversation because every time we kill somebody, Wayne reaches into this one pouch and sprinkles a little bit of dirt on their forehead. Really weird. I can't be bothered to ask him why, because that's not about my character.
I see what you're saying, and I think that there's truth to each of those points, but I think it's a lot simpler than that. One thing that I have learned over the years of both running and playing games is there's one very clear central tenet that has been pounded home to me that is a lesson that I refuse to learn. As a game master, you cannot force role-playing.
I agree. It's like forcing friendship prior analogy. You can't do it.
When you do that, it has an opposite and adverse effect.
We tried this at a game once, yes. You and I.
This is that's where we
planned out
it.
A scene.
Yeah, of, all week we planned out this
scene. This is going to be so awesome. We're going to have these really great role-playing moments. And it became the awkward guy scene Dan described.
Man. Wayne and I, we work together. We play together. We're friends in real life. Our characters were deep and detailed, are intertwined, all this stuff. And it was the most awkward moment I ever spent with you. It was like talking to your mom about sex when you're 30. It was super awkward and nobody wants to be there. And Wayne and I were like, so
that didn't turn out like we thought.
Well, and I think it also, like always, depends on the people you play with. We have some socially awkward people in my normal gaming group, but we also have very outgoing people like myself and a couple other people, and we can just play off each other and it gets the other people into the game. So I think if you do have a group of generally quiet people, you're going to have a hard time pulling role play out of them because they don't like interacting with each other. My brother is a great example. Mm-hmm. I play in one of his games now where he's a GM, and sometimes I dread it because it is just so role heavy. Right. And no role playing, and he doesn't promote it. So it can come from both angles, but I think it has a lot to do with the people you play with, the actual personalities.
Well, and one thing too, sometimes some players are looking for permission from the GM. This is going to sound really odd, but as I think through just my own gaming experiences, I've both seen this while running for con games, as well as experienced it once or twice myself as a player. If you're a very outspoken person. So, like, in our group, I know if you're running a game, I can jump in and roleplay anytime I want, and that's not going to bother you.
No.
But
I love it.
If I'm at, say, a Pathfinder Society event, where that's not what they always expect, I'm looking for the cues. Can I jump in and do this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I accidentally did that.
And I've seen that with players before that they've been in more of those kind of groups. They'll come to a con game, and they won't know if I jump in and just start doing this crazy thing right now. And having this conversation is, are we still going to be able to finish it? So one thing I tend to do is I'll have an NPC around to start the conversation and then fade the NPC back, because that's my way of saying, you have my permission. You don't need my permission.
But you have it.
You have if you think you need it, here's the cue.
Yeah, and Wayne, I absolutely, in something like a Pathfinder Society, it's different because the goal is not the game. The goal is to complete the game within the allotted time and get the best reward out of it.
And a lot of times it's a 4-hour session and we have 2 hours to play it.
Yeah.
So that guys, time puzzles, really comes in.
There is role playing, there's story.
And, and I'm sure there are people who've had different experiences, so I'm not painting you with too broad of a brush here. But the point is, there is an end objective, and that objective is not purely, oh, let's just have fun and we'll pick it up again next week. That's obviously it's a different mechanism. But you're absolutely right that NPCs are a great way for the game master to get this started, because when everyone else is sitting there, if an NPC starts talking to a PC, I have found a lot of times, not always, but a lot of times the other PCs will want to throw something in, especially if the NPC starts talking about something interesting. Says something like, you want to hear a little bit of my story? So I killed somebody from Country X, which is why I'm here. Well, you chose Country X because that's the place that another character's from, and they're on their backstory. They're super patriotic and all this stuff. Maybe they'll bite onto it. Maybe they won't. But you've at least put something out front there for them to latch onto.
Yeah. Another thing I've seen is just kind of watching the mood of the table. I've seen you try to set it up before, and I kind of look around the table, and it's like, well, two players just came from driving in a long way, and they're kind of tired tonight. Mm-hmm. Another player has allergies going on. Actually, in our group, half the table has allergies going on. But you kind of look around, it's like, normally this might have worked, but the table is not feeling it right now.
Right.
And that really sucks when you're running a game and you reach that moment. But that's where you have to kind of weigh,
you know,
maybe this isn't the week for that.
I have noticed, like what I said, when you have very social people in your group, our GMs have it really easy. You just shut up. And then it just happens. It really does. We don't like awkward silence in my group. And so one of us will be like, okay, this thing's happening now. And like, I think one of our GMs sat there and let us do whatever we wanted. We took over an entire tavern, made it a fight club. And I think we developed a null friend all in an hour of role playing because my GM just sat there. So I think that if you have the group to do it, you can. You just let them do it. Don't do the thing where like, what are you guys doing? How are you doing it? Like, no, if you just shut up, we'll do it.
Now, it definitely is the group and knowing your group, which is a drum we've been banging on this show since the beginning. Know your group. With my group, it's a little bit different, though, because if I go silent, if I just sort of withdraw and let them talk, I am the most in-your-face active person in the group. So if I'm running the game, there's a step down in-your-faceness. And if there's silence, like the GM says, okay, and here's where you are, and then he fades back. And he does the jazz hands when he does it. He can be expected to have people just kind of sit there and then start pulling out phones and playing Candy Crush. And what's the new game with the numbers? 2048? 2048. And texting other people. And they all start coming out one by one. And Dan and I, especially, we can go on a whole rant about. So we can do a whole episode on cell phones and technologies and how they are killing
games. It'd be a bonus episode. It'd just be us screaming.
Yes. And I am guilty of it. So I can tell you from an insider's perspective. But I've stopped because it annoys me so much. But what really kills it, though, is not the lack of attention. It's the lack of FaceTime. Because people can be on their cell phones and interact with the game. I cast Magic Missile, or yes, I tell the king this, and I do this move on Candy Crush, or I want to roll my bluff against the guard. Okay, now I text this person this. And the game can kind of go on, although it's not very exciting for me. The problem comes in is when you try to get those role play moments between the players, there's no FaceTime. Because everybody is looking down at their electronic device. So I have described it multiple times of I am sick and tired of role playing with the tops of people's heads. Oh. Because they're all looking down at something. It's not that they're not giving me the attention.
Yeah.
I understand why that's annoying because you put this game together and you're there. You can't game.
Yeah.
You know, you stop gaming.
Yeah, and like I said, I don't want to get on that because there would be a whole tangent there. And I actually have found some solutions I don't think I've ever talked about on the show.
Wireless jammer?
Well, no, I have.
I gave that serious goddamn thought.
I actually shopped for one.
That doesn't work if you're tied to a wireless, though.
Yeah, and I actually...
we'll make it work.
I actually shopped for one several years back. Mm-hmm. But we'll put that topic off for some
All the games
episode.
I play are local on my phone, so it wouldn't do anything for me.
But things I found that help. If you're the game master, find that guy.
Yeah.
And I mean that guy in a good way, not the bad way. If I was running a game...
Not pedo guy, loud guy.
Yeah. If I was running a game for this group right now and everyone was all kind of down and quiet, I would start role-playing with Chad.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the fact that I know he's outgoing, and on top of that, being a game master as well, he's going to get what I'm struggling with.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried to be that person as well. At least, you know, if I know things at the table are dead quiet, I try to say something. I think the game master can also subconsciously send the wrong message. Because if you say, what are you guys doing? You just put the focus on action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've not had something like an NPC say, hey, what about this? You've just asked them. You've kept them in that mindset. They're not in a social mindset. And even if you don't have an NPC around, I think you can still find that guy and pass him a note card and say, hey, help me out.
Mm-hmm.
Just role play a little bit here. Let's get some character stuff out in the open.
You hit a key there, note card. That was actually something I had that I've used as a, like if I've noticed that someone is looking down a little much, I'll give them a note card to look down at instead. And I've actually used that trick before. If I think someone is starting to check out, I will target that person for a note card.
Yeah. You know, Dan, you just need a couple of note cards. One that just says help, and then other ones that say RP,
you know,
over planning, and you just show them up. It's like RP, help to me. And it's like, okay, let's do this.
Speaking of note cards, I was talking to a guy at Fantasy Shop the other day.
Over planning, help.
And we got to talking about role playing games, and I was just there to pick up comics, and I ended up having an hour long conversation with the guy. And one of the things he was saying he does that I told him I was going to blatantly steal was we've talked about passing
the products from a store.
Well, no, thanks, this, Brodor.
This wasn't the employee. This was just another customer. One of the things he said he does is he does the note things, but he'll actually bring the player into another room occasionally to talk about a note. And he says that sometimes when he does that, what the note will actually say is, sorry, I don't really have anything. I just want to keep the table hopping. Huh. And he'll go in, they'll shoot the shit for a minute or two, they'll come back, sit down, and everyone will think this person has a big secret. I've done the passing a note card that doesn't really have anything important on it, but I've never gone to the extreme of, we need to go step in another room so I can share something with you, give them nothing, and then come back to the table.
You know what a good game is to help you practice that? Not that this is real publicly available, but the revisions I've done on the Star Trek Fastest Ship combat game, because of the fact that to keep up appearances, let's say Ship A doesn't even have sensors, but you're in the scanning phase. Well, I can't let the other ship know they don't have sensors. I have to keep up appearances. So I have to walk over and as accurately as I can pantomime a conversation about what they're doing to scan. And I have to pretend I'm doing something I'm not doing. And that's just one example. That game is full of things where I have to keep pretending to do things I'm not actually doing because I have to keep the double blind where the ship's crews don't know how the other ships are doing. Now, let's take this from a player perspective. I think there are two big things that can help. If you're a player and you want to do this, well, I think thing zero here is going to be watch the GM. Have some sympathy. If you notice things are getting dull, look, even if things aren't getting dull, role play makes everything better.
Yes.
Even if you're in combat, role play. If there's an NPC there, role play. If you're strategizing, role play. It's a freaking role-playing game. There is no point in which you cannot role play. Now, there might be times when you're only role playing, but in my mind, there's no time you should be not role playing. But here's the two things I think you can do. First off, take an interest in the other characters. I talked about this with the egocentrism. You know, why is it that you're with this group of people, you're supposedly friends or fellow adventurers or whatever it is, and yet the only thing in your mind is my character, Mike? Just ask a question. It doesn't have to be detailed. Just be like, so why do you wear that? Where are you from? What's with this little ceremony you keep doing? Just find something. Because you know what? The person who put that much energy into making their character probably is dying for the opportunity to talk about it. The second thing, and this is something Chad and I started talking about in that episode before I cut the whole thing off, was based on real-life conversations. You know, as Chad said in that episode, we went to dinner before that recording. We went to dinner before tonight's recording. We talked about things.
Yeah.
We talked about movies and superheroes and comics and all kinds of stuff. Now, I realize that may not be relevant in every game. You can't really have a D&D game where you're talking about the latest superhero movie. But the point is, you can still look at the...
You know, you can have a D&D game about local bards.
Yeah.
You know, and just make it up.
Did you hear this new bard group?
But the party are, but the party are all bards.
Yeah. Somebody brought back a deer. Okay, they said, I'm going to roll my wilderness lore and bring back deer. As soon as they bring it back, be like, seriously, how is it you track the runts? Because that's all you ever bring. You know, you can find something there.
Yeah.
What I want to see just once in one of my Bard's Bard games is I want the bards around the campfire to start trying to outdo each other with stories. I haven't had that happen yet. I want to see that happen where it goes around the table, each one, well, in my kingdom, our knights, you know, slay dragons with toothpicks. And then go to the next one. Well, in our kingdom, they don't have toothpicks. They have to use their bare hands.
And I just want to slay dragons with even bigger dragons.
I want to see that back and forth start happening because it's a whole party of parts. It should happen.
Small dragons because we don't have toothpicks. We just have dragons everywhere.
Well, I think it also throws really back to...
Chad, you're in my Bard's Bard game. You now know what I've been looking for.
It's like one of those things with the hippos and the birds. You just open your mouth and a dragon lands on it and starts picking out your teeth.
That's right.
Cleaning your teeth for you. Yeah.
I think it throws back to dedicating yourself to your character, too. You've built your character. You know what they're going to do. You know how they're going to act. And if you're playing a character who's relatively outgoing and you're just sitting there doing nothing at a campfire, that doesn't seem like you're being true to your character.
So we had a one-shot recently, and my character was a teenage girl. So, you know, as we started, the first thing I started doing was I had a stack of note cards and I started writing text to the other players. While she's sitting in class, I'm handing out note cards to the other players. Has nothing to do with the plot of the story. I'm role playing back and forth with at least two people at the table in text conversations.
Right.
And it was a Cthulhu game, and then we lost cell phones. But before we lost cell phones, I had that going with the individual players.
Yeah, but you knew your character. You knew what she would do. Yeah.
Well, in that case, it was a character that was handed to me. And that's one of the things I find when I've seen a GM try to set this up and it really doesn't work, it's when they start doing it at the very beginning of the campaign. In a one shot at the beginning, when I don't know the character yet.
The first thing off is, you guys are in a bar. Go. And like you said, you don't have a feel for the character yet. You don't have a feel. It's really awkward. As a player,
then, it feels like the GM is looking at me and saying, dance, monkey, dance.
Right.
And it's like, I GM myself. I tell myself, dance, monkey, dance. I don't need a GM to tell me, dance, monkey, dance.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
You know, one of the things, too, is, what we're talking about is, essentially, we want our players to role play with each other in these scenes. We don't want to have to force feed them. We don't want to have to prompt them, all that sort of stuff. We want the magic to happen. I think something on the player's end that the GM really can't do much to control is that for characters to realistically interact with each other, characters have to be relatable in some way. Let's go back to the campfire for a minute. Wayne is playing Joe Bard. He's the everyman's bard, and he's bedded 1,000 women and drank an even more wine, and he's sung all the songs and seen all the sights. You know, he's pretty relatable. Yeah, he seems like a pretty average, nice guy you'd want to hang out with. Has a lot of stories. Now, I'm playing Joe Darth, demon from the Undercroft. I never talk because I'm so goddamn evil. I am made of dark flame, and if you look at me, you go insane.
And then to round the party out, Julia is playing a Miss Dark rogue that hides in the shadows. And if I talk, you'll know where I'm hiding. So I'm going to hide in the trees and watch.
And I'm super mysterious. And so I never, I have this really confused past that I never talk about because I'm so mysterious. And I'm never going to talk about my past. And I'll never say anything. I just quietly observe you all. Really? I mean, seriously, I mean, this band of dysfunctional ass bags is can in any games be a huge part of the problem.
You know, and the thing is
look,
that
Gnarl was messed up, but he took an active interest in other people.
Well, and
any of us could have roleplayed with Gnarl.
He helped Sir William commit murders to get him over his fear of murdering.
So,
true story.
Yeah. You know, so even an ass bag character like Joe Darth of the Third Undercroft or whatever the f*** he was, you can still relate to him because it's like, Joe Bard is sitting there. It's like, hey, you know, bops him on the shoulder, burns his hand on the evil under flame, and that is makes up his character and says, hey, what's going on? What's new? What's in your life?
So what do they eat in the underworld? Because you can't really grow things down there with all the fire.
So here's the wrong answer. Nothing.
The souls of children.
Souls of children. Yeah, that's the wrong answer.
What do the children eat? Because, I mean, they have to live.
Other evil.
Have a soul.
It's you.
It's like playing with Henry Rollins.
He's so our Limmy from Motorhead. Well, that'd be so awesome to role play with Henry Rollins and Limmy and, oh, yeah, Nathan Explosion. Yeah.
Half of Norway.
Half of Norway. It's like, yeah. Or what you could say is, in my previous life, I loved steak. And then you get kind of like, well, I love steak too. And like, suddenly that's the interaction. It's very silly, but that's the interaction. It's like, okay, Joe Bard can relate to steak. And this guy is so out there, you can't relate to him. And it's just like, well, wait a minute. It is the tiniest, barest, most silliest thread, but there is something we can talk about. And then Joe Bard can like start pulling that thread
sure,
a bit more.
There.
It's like, well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Let's, what does
you
that
have
mean?
Steak in hell?
Yeah.
The steak thing
I
reminds
bet it's
me of
overcooked.
Something, Chad. So the steak thing reminds me of something, Chad. I was reading a comic book the other
day.
My
throat really hurts now.
I was reading a comic book the other day, and it's one of the big new crossovers. And it starts off with a conversation around a table. And they're all asking each other, it's Wolverine, Nick Fury, Captain America, and Black Widow, and they're all asking, what's the best steak you've ever had? As they sit around in a steak diner eating, and Captain America's like, I'm not really sure. And Nick's like, no, I know the best steak you had. Mm-hmm. And he goes into a war story that the two of them had together. Yeah. And when it's done, he's like, you know, that was the best steak I ever had. And after I read it, I'm like, how cool would that be to have in a game session?
Yeah.
And then after that, they go on to do the, point of the comic book.
Let's make that into a role-playing game. You have the player who's playing Captain America and the player who's playing Nick Fury. The player who's playing Nick Fury made an assumption, dictated something about the Captain America player without his permission. He said, I know this thing about you that you as a player don't know about your own character. Let me tell you about it.
Let me remind you because I was there.
And the Captain America player, here's the wrong way of doing it. It's like, no, that's completely wrong. Crickets. And
crickets is where I start at the problem.
Yeah.
Because if you don't want somebody mess with your character, you can still spin it that way of saying, no, you're that full of crap.
That is not how that down
that didn't even happen.
You were drunk in a beer garden in Munich.
Do you not remember
that battle? You've got me confused with somebody else. I was off over here doing
you
this,
had but you still have a conversation. Captain Canada.
Do you really think that was the best thing? Do you not remember the shrapnel in that cow?
Oh, Bessie in the landmine. Frau Bessie.
Frau Bessie. Frau Sweeper.
It's always the innocents that pay in
mind. All right. So that's the big thing here is I think.
Did we even find any solutions?
Yeah, I
offered a lot of advice.
Role-play your character, take an interest in other people's characters, and when in doubt, think about the sorts of small talk you make in real life. There's got to be something there. Obviously, the Game Master can't force it, but the Game Master can encourage it, and the players, I think, should be a little bit more aware that, hey, when there's this dead time, try to role-play. And
don't practice your quick draw.
Don't wait until the dead times. You can role-play in the middle of any situation. See, I think we did have some advice, even though
the note cards
buried it.
You know, the note card idea, I think, is another great one. I never thought about using note cards in that metagame way.
I actually have a problem with note cards. As a GM, I don't like them. I love people passing note cards. Game Mastering Toolbox, bring some index cards and a few pins. Pass them out to everybody. I'm all for it. When I'm game mastering, to me, success is a pace and a flow.
Son.
And it's like, oh, I need to blah, 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 blah. And I'm going to pass a note card. Stop. Right. Misspell a word. Scratch it out. Rewrite it. Read it. No one can read this. My handwriting's terrible.
Without note cards, I would have never been able to give the singing parts to Wayne and Beth.
That's true.
And I'm writing while I'm talking.
No, and I think other players should have them. I am terrible at it. Or at least I feel that when I write a note card, it puts the game at full stop. And I don't like that.
The one thing as a GM that I don't like about note cards is if there's something timely.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you're running the game and you're setting the pace and you write something and what they're going to write back, you need to know that right then because something's going to happen. Yeah. That's the part I don't like because if it's someone that's writing
paragraph,
then once you get it back, you have to read.
Yeah.
And then it does exactly what you're saying. It screws up the pace.
Full stop.
All right. Well, speaking of full stop.
So go out to fearthecon.com if you haven't bought your tickets yet.
Usual two things, fearthecon.com. If you've not bought your tickets, please do. We'd love to see you there. Also, if you've not yet picked up a copy of Sojourn, you can find that at sojournanthology.com. Or if you go to feartheboot.com and hit refresh once or twice, you'll probably see a Sojourn ad on the side of it. So,
and join Dan and I on Tuesdays on Twitch TV.
Thursdays.
I said Tuesday,
yes.
Didn't I? Thursday. On Thursdays. We record on Tuesdays. Yes. The other Fear the Boot activity.
Thursdays, 7 to 11 Central. Chad and I play our Rome games, which you can find at twitchtv.com or twitch.tv.
/fear_the_boot.
I'll put all this in the show notes.
So I really want a Wall Ballers t-shirt.
I do too. Wall Ballers.
Why aren't we making this happen right now?
Well, I think some of it's because the Wall Ballers haven't been used much lately.
So we're playing Rome, right? Rome, the city is on the box. It's the name of the game. And we reached a point where Rome has mighty walls, boiling oil. The defenders are like all elite guys, and there's extra defenders. And everyone stopped invading Rome.
Yeah, the wars moved to Europe and Africa.
Yeah, and Rome is like a land of peace and happiness.
See, I want to buy John the t-shirt that Happy Jacks is putting out right now. They're gathering their pre-orders for it. and it goes exactly opposite to everything we've had to say here. The shirt just says, stop talking to my XP.
I like that.
I support that. So, thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great week and great games, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2014. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.